the Giants, too.
Writers have enjoyed the fame and reputation that he has, yet his numerous works are largely unknown. When Lord Kingsborough of England published 9 volumes of work entitled Antiquities of Mexico, he included the writings of Ixtlilxóchitl in Spanish. This work was published in 1832 all the way up to 1848, but because of the extensive cost of publication, it was never widely circulated. In 1965, Alfredo Chavero edited and annotated the words of Ixtlilxóchitl. It was republished in 2 volumes of approximately 500 pages each, with a preface by Ignacio Davila Garibi. Chavero called the books Obras Históricas de Don Fernando de Alva Ixtlilxóchitl. In the accounts of Ixtlilxóchitl, he relates that the first people, the Kinemetzin, came from the great Tartary, and were part of those who came from the division of Babel to this land. They came from the great tower at the time of the confusion of languages, wandered for 104 years before they settled at Huehuetlalpa, which became their capital city and the ancient place of the red. Huehue, meaning ancient, and Tlatlapalan means place of the red. Their king, Chichimecat, traveled with them, crossing a large part of the world, arriving at this land which they considered to be good. Afterwards, they settled in the northern part of the land. Thereafter, they called themselves Chichimecas, named after their first king. It was customary wherever the Chichimecatl settled, whether it be a large city or small town, to name it after the first king or leader who possessed the land. Among the Chichimecas were divisions or branches. Some were more civilized, and some were more barbaric, but they all are descended from the same forefathers, and it has been said that they came from the occidental areas. In 1554, the ancient Guatemalan town of Totonicapan, the prominent native nobles of the town wrote a document called the Titulo de Totonicapan that told the origin of their ancestors and is similar to Ixtlilxóchitl's above writing. The Quiches are the Indian people of Guatemala who are the descendants of the Maya. The authors of the Titulo de Totonicapan write, "The 3 wise men, the Nahuales, the chiefs and leaders of 3 great peoples, and of others who joined them, called Umame, the ancients, extending their sight over the 4 parts of the world and over all that is beneath the sky, and finding no obstacle, came from the other part of the ocean, from where the sun rises, from a place called in the Mayan Pa Tulan, Pa Kivan. The principal chiefs were 4. Together, these tribes came from the other part of the sea, from the east, and from Pa Tulan, Pa Kivan, bordering on Babylonia. These, then, were the 3 nations of Quiches, and they came from where the sun rises, descendants of Israel, of the same language and same customs. When they left Pa Tulan, Pa Kivan, the first leader was Balaam Kitze, by unanimous vote, and then the great father, Nashte, God, gave them a present called Giron Gagal. When they arrived at the edge of the sea, Balaam Kitze touched it, the sacred director, with his staff, and at once a passage opened, which then closed up again. And for thus the great God wished it to be done, because they were the sons of Abraham and Jacob." It is interesting to note that the sacred ball or director is also mentioned in the Book of Mormon in Alma, chapter 38, as follows. And now, my son, I have somewhat to say concerning the thing which our forefathers called a ball or director, or our fathers called it Liahona, which is being interpreted a compass, and the Lord prepared it. From this it would appear that these records are speaking about the same peoples. Ishlochitl then gives a surprising account of giants who were called Kina Metin So Kulichinimke. It is believed that this tribe of giants was one of the branches of the Chichimecas. From the above accounts, it appears that the Nephilim also found the daughters of the first settlers of the Kinametsin to be fair. Their giant offspring became a race called the Kinametin Kuli Chime. The ancient Toltec record keepers referred to the giants as the Kinametsin, also known as Kinames. And as they had a record of the history of the Kinametsin, they learned that they had many wars and dissensions among themselves. Joe Allen states in his book Exploring the Lands of the Book of Mormon that the giants were destroyed and their civilization came to an end as a result of great calamities and punishments from heaven for some grave sins that they had committed. Ishlochitl gives the date of their destruction as 240 BC. Joe Allen further compares some common elements with Ishlochitl's writings and the Book of Mormon in the following. Number one, they both speak of the first civilization coming from the Great Tower at the time of the confusion of languages. Number two, they both speak of a white god who was born of a virgin and who ascended to heaven after teaching his people. Number three, they both record the date of a great destruction occurring in the first month of the 34th year, or at the death of Christ. Number four, they both use the same terminology in describing the manner in which cities were named. Number five, they both speak of three distinct civilizations that predate the coming of Christ. Number six, they both record the destruction of the first civilization that predates the coming of Christ, who lived in the northern lands, or the land northward. Number seven, they both speak of a nation whose principal area meant land of abundance or bountiful. The Toltecas were the record keepers, having a written language. They were wise men of the arts and sciences. The same is said of the Nephites in the Book of Mormon. If the Toltecs and the Nephites are one and the same, then the Book of Mormon is an ancient Toltec record. It is also interesting to note that the Maya have legends surrounding their lost golden books, and by comparison, the fact is that the ancient Toltec record, known as the Book of Mormon, was also written on gold plates. Joseph Smith, the Mormon prophet who translated the ancient Toltec Nephite records and published them as the Book of Mormon in 1830, once expressed an opinion as to where the Book of Mormon lands were located. In 1841, John Lloyd Stevens published a book about his travels in Central America, Chiapas, and Yucatan. Expressing his opinion, Joseph Smith said, "Mr. Stevens's great development of antiquities are made bare to the eyes of all the people by reading the history of the Nephites in the Book of Mormon. They lived about the narrow neck of the land, which now embraces Central America, with the cities that can be found." From these comparisons, it appears that the Olmecas were the Olmecs, and they were a branch that descended from the Kinametsin. The Mayas were also a branch that descended from the Kinametsin. Since the Kinametsin came from the oriental section of the world, they and their descendants were oriental in appearance and brought their oriental culture to the new world, hence the yin and yang symbols. The Olmecs have been described as being a black race, but if one is to visit the Veracruz area of Mexico today, you will see many faces with similar features, but they are not black, but rather Polynesian-looking, with brown skins. They, too, have been described as a large people, but not tall, just large. Their descendants in the Veracruz area today have the same body build. The first settlers were probably a mixture of several peoples from the Tartary section of the Orient, thus the different looks. The Kinametsin, or Jaredites, left the Tartary area of the Orient about 2800 BC and arrived in Mesoamerica around 2700 BC. The Book of Ether, found in the Book of Mormon, gives their account of how a colony of 24 families, led by the hand of God, arrives on this continent, coming in 8 ship-like barges that crossed the great waters in 344 days. The Book of Mormon has the abridged record of the family lineage of just one of these, Jared. Nothing else is mentioned of the other 23 family histories. These other families were the different branches of the original Kinametsin settlers that Ishla Tidl spoke of in his account of the first people. However, the Popol Vuh gives the record and history of most of the other tribes who arrived from the east, whose names are found in the Titulo de los Señores de Totonicapán. Ishla Tidl's writings tell of a second migration of people called the Zicalanas, who came in ships or boats from the east to the land of Potocan, now Veracruz, and from there they began to populate the land. Upon arrival, they soon found some of the giants who had escaped the destruction and extermination of the calamity, called the Second Age. These giants, because of their size and strength, oppressed and enslaved their new neighbors. To free themselves of the giants, the new settlers invited them to a solemn feast. After the giants became full and intoxicated, they were killed and destroyed with their own weapons. In comparison, the Book of Mormon calls these people the Mulekites. Mulek was one of the sons of Zedekiah Mataniah. It is speculated that Mulek was a young baby who was disguised as a daughter, or perhaps still in his mother's womb, which allowed him to escape the wrath of death instituted on each of the sons of Zedekiah by King Nebuchadnezzar at 586 BC. In time, he and his peoples, having multiplied greatly, were also led by God to Mesoamerica. They came on ships, perhaps on Phoenician ships, and landed in the land northward, which was the area of the heartland of the Jaredites. Mulek was a Jew of the tribe of Judah. The Mesoamerican document called the Lords of Totonicapán, written in 1554, may be referring to the Mulekites in the following. They came from where the sun rises, descendants of Israel, of the same language and the same customs. There is an oral tradition that still prevails in Veracruz, which relates that many in the area are descendants of the House of Israel. Ishla Tidl's writings tell of the third and last migration to the early Mexico, the Toltecas. By all accounts, they are described as a bearded white race, high of stature, who came from the east on ships. He also states that as late as the 10th century A.D., there were white, blonde children born to the Tolteca descendants. Many historians believe that they were Phoenicians, but the Book of Mormon, by comparison, states that they were of the House of Israel, originally living in Jerusalem, and were descendants of the tribe of Joseph. Lehi and his colony left Jerusalem about 601 B.C., and after much wandering in the wilderness, they were directed by God to build a ship and cross the waters to the new promised land. The Book of Mormon calls them Nephites, and later a splinter branch became known as the Lamanites. Joe Allen, in his book, identifies the Lamanites as the classic Mayas between 200 and 900 A.D. The writings of Ishla Tidl tell of the Spaniards traveling along the coastal areas, such as the lands of Chiconoras and the Duharesas, and finding men in those parts who are 11 and 12 hands in height. And they were told that there were others even taller who resided inland that were 30 hands tall. The megalithic cities of Monte Alban and Mitla, Mexico, were probably built by the giant Kinametzen and the large Olmecs. As with other ancient sites, newer construction has been added on top of original structure. Besides building megalithic cities, the Nephilim and their giant offspring apparently were involved in digging tunnels through the mountain ranges of the world that ran for hundreds, even thousands of miles, and all interconnected. They used these passages for traveling, protection, and storage of manuscripts and treasure. There are legends of these tunnel systems in Tibet, India, South America, America, parts of Central Asia, Britain, and Europe. All say the giants built them. Do they exist? In 1972, after a big earthquake in Lima, Peru, a tunnel system was discovered beneath the coastal city. On exploration of the tunnel system, the explorers were amazed to find that large parts of the city were undercut by a maze of tunnels, all leading into the mountains. These tunnels couldn't be explored by their terminal points because they had collapsed during the course of the centuries. A similar tunnel system was discovered beneath Cuzco in 1923 that went in the direction toward Lima. In Guatemala, tunnels had been discovered that ran for as much as 30 miles in one direction that linked Mayan cities in a vast underground network. Another set of similar tunnels may exist in Arizona. When the American Army was hot in pursuit of Geronimo around Arizona, he and his braves would ride into box canyons and then literally disappear, leaving the U.S. Army totally mystified. Later, Geronimo and his braves would suddenly turn up hundreds of miles away in Mexico. This event happened many times. Was Geronimo using the passageways of these ancient tunnels to escape? Certain members of the Navajo tribe apparently know about these tunnels, but keep them secret. The monolithic sarcophagus of Pakal, the king of Palenque, is a large one. Pakal has been said to have been 9 feet tall or more. The highly carved lid of his sarcophagus is nearly 13 feet long. This would indicate that he was exceptionally tall in stature for a Mayan, who as a people are short. The tablet of the foliated cross and the tablet of the cross at Palenque both confirm that Pakal was at least 9 feet tall. In these carved tablets, Pakal is shown opposite his son, Khan Balhun. And in both carvings, the difference in height is obvious. He ascended to the throne through his mother, who was a Mayan ruler for a short period of time, and was his great-grandmother. No mention is made of his father, but he claimed divine kingship. Could he have been a son of the Nephilim, or a descendant of one of the survivors of the giant Kinametzen in the 240 BC destruction? There were giants in Africa. The following is taken from Steve Quayle's website. In 1936, two French archaeologists, Leboeuf and Grial, led an expedition to Chad in north-central Africa. As they crossed the plains, they saw some areas covered with small mounds. They also found large numbers of these mounds around Fort Lemy and Golfale. Deciding to investigate, they dug up several egg-shaped funeral jars that contained the remains of a gigantic race, along with pieces of their jewelry and their works of art. These giants, according to the natives, were called Saus. Scholars who trace their history say they came from Kiber, located north of Mecca, to Bilma, which is situated about 300 miles north of Lake Chad. A people with a well-developed religion and culture, they grew in numbers and founded communities in Fort Lamy, Mahaya, Nidigé, and Golfale. They lived in peace in their new land until the close of the 9th century, when the Muslims made wars against them, intending to force their acceptance to the Islamic faith. The Saus giants, who converted to the faith, lived to become servants of the Arabs, but those who steadfastly refused to convert were eventually wiped out. By the end of the 16th century, not many Saus giants remained. Are the Watusi descendants of the giants? Steve Quayle states in his website the following: the Watusi are black, but they are not Negroes. Many grow to heights of 7 feet or more. Anthropologists are at a loss to explain the Watusi's tallness. One possible explanation is that they are offspring of the giants who fled before Joshua's legions and escaped to Africa. But after many centuries of interbreeding with the Aborigines, they have greatly reduced in bulk and might. Marco Polo tells of running into a gigantic people in Zanzibar, an island on the African coast. He wrote the following account: Zanzibar is a very large and important island. It has a 2,000-mile coastline. All the people are idolaters. They have a king and a language of their own and pay tribute to no one. The men are large and fat, although they are not tall in proportion to their bulk. They are strong-limbed and hefty as giants. They are also so strong that they can carry as many as 4 men, and they eat enough for 5. They are quite black and go about completely naked but for a loincloth. Their hair is so curly they can only comb it when it is wet. They have wide mouths and turned up noses. Many islands upon the sea have megalithic structures that were built by the giants at one time or another. More of this will be discussed in the Lost Civilizations chapters. In the Kiribati Islands, located in the Pacific Ocean, there is a legend of 2 giants, apparently brothers, who came to the Isle of Nauru from the sky. They were twice as large as normal humans and could lift enormous stones and perform other feats that required great strength. One of the giants was named Nauru, hence the name of the island. Because the islanders were afraid of them, they devised a plan to get the giants drunk on palm wine and then kill them. After they killed the giants, they were buried in pits and covered with stones. The local natives have shown the 2 grave sites to several investigating groups. Nearby are several upright monoliths, apparently compass stones. 2 of the stones were made of granite, which is not found on the Kiribati Islands. Besides the grave sites, there are many fossilized huge footprints that can be clearly seen in the volcanic rock throughout the islands. The main spot that these footprints can be found is in the village of Bonriaba. Most of these footprints are 3 feet long and have 6 toes on each foot. On Pohnpei Island, formerly called Panape in Micronesia, are the giant ruins of Nan Modal. No one knows who, when, or how the city was built, but the Japanese reportedly did discover very large human bones there that indicated the previous inhabitants were 7 feet tall or more. The local natives have a legend that the stones magically flew through the air. In Australia, the Aborigines have a tradition that there once lived a race of giants in their land who stood from 12 to 15 feet tall. Evidence of a past presence is preserved in fossilized enormous foot tracks in central Queensland, near Bathurst, as well as on the Blue Mountains of New South Wales. In the 1960s, near Bathurst, enormous hand axes, clubs, adzes, knives, and other giant tools were excavated that could only be used by a people of immense strength and height, being over twice the height of modern man. Even today, it is said that there is a race of 7-foot-tall giant aborigines living in the remote Simpson Desert in the middle of the continent. Childers states in his book, Lost Cities of Ancient Lemuria and the Pacific, the following. Giant stone chairs can be found in the central desert and all over the country. There are stone circles and stone hinges along the northern New South Wales coast on the plateau behind Coffs Harbor. In the Simpson Desert are hundreds of standing stones and megaliths, some of which stand 30 feet high. They appear to have come from miles away. Australia is full of this stuff. Many giant human footprints, contemporary with dinosaurs, have been found in Dinosaur Park near Glenrose, Texas. One particular footprint was determined to be that of a woman, estimated to be about 10 feet tall, weighing 1,000 pounds. These estimates were determined through cross-sectional cuts and compression studies. In the same area, some giant human footprints have been found inside the tracks of dinosaurs. Glenrose has a museum there where plaster castings of the original tracks are on display. Scientists say these findings contradict modern evolution theories because mankind was not to evolve yet for another 75 to 100 million years. But these giant footprints were Nephilim giants, not human. The stories and accounts of giants covered in this chapter are just a few of the many hundreds. What has been written about them in this chapter barely scratches the surface. The most important thing that the authors have tried to convey is that a race of giants once occupied this planet both before and after the cataclysm. This chapter has dealt with the second eruption of Nephilim that currently occurred after the cataclysm. The Lost Civilizations chapters will tell of the first eruptions of the Nephilim prior to the cataclysm and of the events leading to their destruction. For some unknown reason, history has largely ignored the worldwide existence of these giants. By doing so, a huge gap of several thousand years remains historically empty of their influence and presence upon this planet. If history would recognize their existence, it would go far to solve many of the problems connected with anthropology. The eruption of the Nephilim was the first attempt to stop the seed of the woman from being born, and was directed against the whole human race, because it wasn't made known to Satan which lineage of Adam the seed of woman would be born through. In time, God made known through his prophets the royal lineage through which the promised seed of the woman should come. So when Abraham was called by God, then Satan attacked him and his seed, perceiving him to be the first of the royal lineage. When David became king, then Satan assailed the royal line. And when the seed of the woman was born, Satan caused Herod to seek the young child's life. Later, Satan tempted Christ, "Cast thyself down." There was another attempt to cast him down and destroy him. Again, Satan fought for eternal dominion of this world by asking Jesus to fall down and worship me. Satan sought to destroy Jesus as he slept on a ship by causing a great storm to arise in an attempt to sink the vessel. All these attempts failed to stop the seed of the woman in fulfilling its destiny to redeem mankind and restore Adam and his righteous seed. Dominion of the future world to come. Until that time, Satan has dominion of this planet, but his time is short. According to biblical scriptures, the fallen angels who sinned before the flood and the spiritual creation are now chained in Tartarus, and they remain imprisoned, awaiting the judgment of the great day. They are unable to do further harm to mankind, although they are immortal. However, the Nephilim who came to the temporal creation, both before and after the cataclysm, and continued after the arrival of Noah, who caused the genetic defects in their giant offspring, remain unrestrained until this day, as far as we know. Similar unions could occur again, and the rise of demonic activity in the age we now live is anticipated in the Bible. Isaiah chapter 24 assures us that all remaining fallen angels will be judged and removed in a future day from all their influence and power over both nature and the affairs of mankind. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall punish the angelic host of the high ones that are on high, and the evil kings of the earth upon the earth. And they shall be gathered together as prisoners are gathered in the pit, and shall be shut up in the prison, and after many days they shall be visited. In Ephesians chapter 6, it warns us in the following verses of the power of Lucifer, the prince of darkness. Put on whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places.